There is a book club program that's happening at the Grand Rapids Area Library. It's called Rapids Reads, and the book chosen for that is by Minnesota author Kao Kalia Yang. The book is called The Late Homecomer, a Hmong family memoir published by Coffee House Press of Minnesota. And Kalia is joining us now on Real Good Words. Kalia, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So this book is being read by Minnesotans, but being read around the world as well. And it's really striking a chord, I think, because it's a memoir, it seems to me, of sort of a different sort. A lot of times we've come to think of memoir as something that's almost kind of self-indulgent or just someone's one person's point of view. And it seems like you're telling more than just your story. Can you kind of explain what you've done with a memoir?
This memoir started out just as a long love letter to my grandma, so it was incredibly personal. A long time ago, I read something by Spike Lee, and he said that you find it very universal and very specific. And so from the onset, I understood that what I was going after was a human story. It was a human story of love between an older woman and her granddaughter, but also very much the human story of a young woman and the love of a people. We are refugees, so I knew that it was a story about refugees, this population that the world is creating more and more of all the time. And then, so important and crucial to my American identity, I understand that most of the people in America came from somewhere to call this place home. That the Hmong story would be one more chapter of this growing book that would stand in history for all that we hope and we stood to be.
Will you tell us a little bit about what it was like when you were young, where you were born, and when you came to Minnesota?
I'm happy to. I was born in Banmina refugee camp in December of 1980. It was about 400 acres, and it was a refugee camp mainly for Hmong people. There was 40,000 to 50,000 Hmong people living there. I was born in this place where Hmong people, by the time I came along, was given food 3 days out of the week. It was a place where the number one cause of death was suicide. All of these people suffering from post-traumatic war syndrome, loneliness, despair. And so it was not such a happy place, but it was my first home. My family came to America as refugees of the secret war in Laos, July 27, 1987. I was 6 years old and 6 months, and I'd never been to school before, never seen a tiger, although I'd heard stories of the tiger, because in Banmina refugee camp, there were no such things as books or tigers to entertain a little kid. And so that is where I'm from. In Minnesota, we lived in the projects of St. Paul. My mother and father entered into the factories and became assemblers, meeting quotas and standards. And my older sister and I were told that our job was to go to school. And then when the other children came along, our job was to take care of them and go to school. But that is my life, or a big part of my life, taking care of children and going to school.
Can you talk a little bit about language, the languages that you speak, and in terms of also writing? Because in the Hmong history, writing is a relatively new form of language.
It is. We are primarily an oral culture. It was not until the 1950s that a French missionary devised a written script for the Hmong language that we're currently using. So I am working in a new medium. I come from a family of storytellers. My uncle Ung says to me, "Do you know what a storyteller is?" And I tell him, "Yeah, they're writers, but in spoken words." And he tells me, "No, in order to be good, you have to understand that a story is like the stop sign on the road of life. Its purpose is to make you pause, look both sides, check the trajectory of the horizon before you continue." I've always had a profound understanding that stories were the gifts of life. It was what one person had to give to another. And so I grew up surrounded by stories. I write in both Hmong and English. I speak Hmong fluently. But when I write on the page, I do not feel like I'm writing in somebody's backyard. The language is very much mine. I write like a native, I think, very fearlessly. I write much better than I can speak, because for so long I didn't speak. You know, for 20 years of my life, I was a selective mute. So the English language on my tongue never feels quite right. It is eternally breathless. It is always as if I'm doing CPR to the language. But in Hmong, it flows beautifully in voice. The way I sound in Hmong, I like to believe, is the way I read, like, on the pages in English. But that is my relationship to language. I prefer the medium anytime, any day. If we could do this interview over email or live chat, it would be so ideal for me. Because I don't like the way I sound in English, even today, even right now.
It's a different sound to you, what comes out of your mouth, than when you speak in Hmong?
Entirely. When I speak like Hmong, I sound like this. It feels like a song on my lips. In English, I feel so raspy and breathless because Hmong is a tonal language. Every breath that I breathe into the world carries meaning. In English, I have to wrap the air in my long units of meaning to make sense to the bigger world.
Kalia, you've had such an interesting life that involves books and words and stories. And you mentioned the time that you didn't speak. Will you tell us more about that? Is it something you could talk about?
Definitely. I was 6 or 7, and my mother and I went to Kmart. So this is shortly after we came to the U.S. We went to Kmart because one day the light bulbs began flickering. And my mom goes up to the clerk, and she says to the clerk, points to the ceiling and says, "I'm looking for the thing that makes the world shiny." She didn't have the one word for light bulb. But my mother has an accent, and the clerk didn't hear the beauty of her words because of her accent. So the clerk walked away and didn't come back. And my mother just stood there looking at her feet. And in the heart of a child, a decision is made. I decide that the world does not need to hear my mom and my dad, and surely it does not need to hear me. So the next day, I stopped talking. At first, it felt like a rebellion, like I could control it. But then when I did begin to speak, it sounded rusty to my ears, and other children would look and sometimes laugh. And then I just stopped talking. I made it through just by nodding and doing the thumbs up. And then when I got to college, I whispered whenever necessary. But I began speaking publicly in English the night of my book launch, April of 2008. I couldn't have known then that as a young writer, I would be paid for my spoken words, not so much on the page. It is an ironic, unpredictable story, the story of how a selective mute becomes a public speaker.
What's that been like since The Late Homecomer came out? Because it has changed your life in many ways, especially in terms of speaking and telling your story, like you said.
It has changed my life in many different ways. Young writers get a lot of free food, so I have 15 extra pounds on me that I don't know what to do with. I've gotten more free plane tickets than I ever imagined I ever would, and more time in planes. Lots of traveling, lots of meeting different people. Some of them outside of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and California have no idea who the Hmong are. And so oftentimes, outside of the 3 states, I'm the first Hmong person that my audience meets. And this is the first time that they meet the secret war and what happened in Laos. So in many ways, without thinking I would be, I've become an introduction to a people for many outside of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and California. Otherwise, I don't know, I feel so proud to be a Minnesota author because I come from one of the most literary states in the nation. It's such a strong tradition of appreciation and faith, conviction in the human story and its power to change the human life, which is really much my passion. It is very much the story of how I've come to be. But I love this life in writing, and I love words on the page. I've become the thing that I didn't know I could be, the thing that my mom and dad couldn't imagine, and so many others of their generation in my community. Whenever I do a reading and there is a Hmong parent in the room, inevitably they come up and they say, "Thank you, you're telling our story." And it never ceases to move me. And then there are also lots of Somali students who write me and they say, you know, it was not until the 1970s that the Somali population came into a written language. How did you tell your story? Share with me so I can do the same. And once again, I'm caught. In the last nearly 3 years, I've met so many good people. So for every one bad comment, one rude statement that I get, there's 100 to make up for it. So it's really been a journey. You know, a long time ago, I told my dad that I didn't want my life, that this isn't the life that I've chosen. And he said to me, he said that life was going to teach me the strength of the human heart, not speak to its fragilities. In the last 2 and some years, that's been my reality. It's a journey into how the human heart grows stronger with time, not weaker. It's been a phenomenal series of years.
Yeah. That's Kalia Yang. We're talking with her about her book. It's called Late Homecomer, A Hmong Family Memoir. Kalia, when we read this book for the KEXE Book Club, I think one of the things we talked about a lot was how this is an American story. And for many of us, our American story, our ancestors that came to America are a few generations ago, and we're not as connected to it. So we talked about individually who we were, because it was so strong to your story that you were Hmong, and you talk about that from a young age, you knew what that meant. Can you kind of explain that a little bit more, what that meant to you, what that means to your family?
No, I've always had a face that belongs in all of Southeast Asia. When people look at me, they've always said, you look Chinese, you look Japanese, you look Korean. The first guess is hardly ever that I'm Hmong. When I look at the map of the bigger world, there is no Hmong land on it. It is just a space that I carry in my heart, this knowledge that informs when I look in the mirror, into the eyes, into the face of another Hmong person. It is this reality that you can remain a people without a nation, without a country, without a piece of land to call your own. I've always been proud of the fact that I belong to a people, now strewn throughout the world, but a people that is united by the conviction and the knowledge that Hmong is what we are, that we come from a history in so many ways of the homeless, but that this memory of home has propelled us into progress, into civilization, into life, generation and generation again. When I read the early stories of the pioneers, I grew up reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, and I've always felt tremendous connection with the roles that each member played in the makings and the workings of a family, with the conviction that families stand by each other and you support each other, and that is the foundation of community. And so it's harder for me to see the differences than it is to see the similarities. I truly believe that human experience, while individual, is hardly unique. And my job as a writer is to bring those stories to light in the hearts of my readers. But I understand that every writer is his, her first audience. So if my story doesn't move me, it has no power to move anybody else, and it shouldn't. Because to do good writing, we have to stand, live. Our hearts have to be on the line. And so it's really much a compliment when you tell me that the folks in your book group, that they connected with the story and that it allowed them to tell their own. Because I believe that every story is in conversation with a human story. So it's really reaffirming. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Well, you will be coming to Grand Rapids, and lots of folks in our listening area and beyond that are reading this book. For someone who hasn't maybe picked it up yet, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about it?
Yes, I say you should pick it up. You should come and meet me, because at the end of the day, I think I'm just a good person. And I don't know, we live in a world where good people, meeting good people, are harder and harder to come by. And I want to meet you good folks. So I hope you pick up the book. There is no guarantee, but it is, you know, I'm 75 to 90% sure that you'll like it, and more than that, that you will connect with it, and that hopefully it will allow you room to reflect on your own experiences and be in conversation with me.
Well, and you mentioned being a Minnesota author. I know for so many readers, we take great pride in the state, like you said, being a writer from here. But when we read books that are from the state, there's just more of a connection to it. And in your book, not only is Bayou, who lives here in Minnesota, but it's published by Coffee House Press in the Twin Cities, which is also another sort of source of pride for the things that are produced in our state. So
I'm so proud to be a Coffee House Press writer. Minnesota has some of the finest independent publishing houses in the nation. And I feel very lucky that I'm coming from one of them. My book is in the process of being turned into an audiobook by Highbridge Audio, and they're also another Minnesota publisher. I just feel like this is the right place for the story to come forth, and that it's such a huge contribution to the landscape of literature in America and world literature. Minnesota has given so much in terms of the literary art, and I'm one voice within it, which is really exciting.
That's Kao Kalia Yang, and the book, again, is called Late Homecomer Among Family Memoir. It was a pleasure to talk to you, Kalia, today, and I hope to meet you when you come in March.
Thank you so much, Heidi. I look forward to meeting you, too.